Why don't we start off talking about negotiations over the COVID-19 relief? I guess as things stand today, can you kind of describe to us what you see as the fundamental disagreement between Republicans and Democrats that's preventing a deal at this point?
Sure. Well, let me start out. I'll get right into that. But let me start out by saying how I fully and completely understand the sense of urgency around this. And it's worth noting that you can go all the way back 5 months ago when we passed what we call the HEROES Act. And that would have been the largest pandemic relief act that we have passed since this whole pandemic started. And what happened, we passed it, we sent it over to the Senate, and nothing happened. It was sitting over on Mitch McConnell's desk collecting dust. So then if you fast forward just a few weeks ago, we passed another, what we called HEROES 2.0. And it was a slimmed down version that was in reaction to our friends on the other side of the aisle saying that the one we passed before was too robust. It had too much in it. I would disagree with that, by the way, and I'm happy to explain. But in that, too, is sitting on the Senate side collecting dust. So here we are today. I believe that the House leadership and Secretary Mnuchin are negotiating in good faith. They are moving the ball forward. Where things stand right now is there is a real desire to put pen to paper and actually put things in writing so we have this in front of us and can figure out where are the disagreements still. As of just last night, and I am on calls regularly with our House leadership, to get ongoing updates. But as of last night, the biggest differences are we as Democrats want to make sure that there is support for state and local governments. And I would challenge anybody to check in with any mayor or county board chair or anybody who leads any local governmental entity. And I think they would tell you they need help. The motor fuel tax is down, sales tax is down. We've got winter right around the corner. We have towns like Peoria who aren't even able to plow residential streets. They've had to close a fire station, lay off firefighters. You know, I mean, these are just real life and death decisions that are having to be made because the federal government has not come forward with a new round of aid. So that is the biggest difference right now.
Mm-hmm.
I am on 24-hour notice to hop a plane and fly back out to Washington and vote on when we have a deal. I cannot tell you exactly when that's going to be, but that is where things stand right now.
I know some people in Illinois, particularly Republicans, have been critical about some relief for state and local governments. Particularly in Illinois, they see it as kind of a bailout of financial mismanagement in the state. And, of course, Governor J.B. Pritzker has made his budget based on lots of federal dollars. Do you think that Congress would be able to come up with, or would you support something that would fund give the governor the kind of funding he's looking for in his budget?
Well, I disagree with that premise. This aid for state and local governments is because we're living through a pandemic, because budgets are there's struggles in town after town after town with balancing the budget. And in order to keep the first responders, the firefighters, the police officers, for that matter, those who plow our roads, those who make sure that our parks are in good shape, those who pick up our garbage. If your tax revenues go down, cuts will have to be made, and we're already seeing that in towns all over. Now, you know, the president likes to disparage where there are Democrats in the governor's mansion as opposed to Republicans in the governor's mansion. I can tell you that there are Republican governors all over this country who need the help just as badly as Democratic governors. This should not be a partisan issue. The fact is that we're living through a pandemic that has been devastating to our economy, and we have to have a national strategy to help our state and local governments, and for that matter, to have a COVID relief plan that comes at a, you know, that understands that this is not a virus that has any respect for any state borders or town borders. You know, so it's all of that is at stake in this next relief package.
And of course, local schools are strapped as well, and they're trying to figure out things. And I know they're seriously looking at budget cuts in this area amongst many school districts. would you support some sort of, financial relief for school districts, or at least resources to give them the equipment that they can do e-learning or open safely? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, not only would I support it, I have supported it.
Mm-hmm.
That was in our package of relief that we passed 5 months ago now. That I was a strong supporter of. Our schools, our teachers are living through something that we've never had to live through before. It's this hybrid learning. In some cases, kids are entirely learning from home. We've got a broadband issue in so many of our communities. In some cases, there's a lot of new technology that has had to be purchased, whether it's tablets or whether it's the hotspots, or whether it's putting up plexiglass, spacing out kids while they are in school. And so that was all part of the package that we passed 5 months ago and then just a few weeks ago. That is still part of what is being negotiated. I would anticipate that in the relief package that we do end up passing, and again, my hope is that the Senate will take it up and the president will sign it into law, but we do have financial aid for our school districts to help them survive through this pandemic.
Realistically, do you think that if a deal is not reached by Election Day, that there is any chance of a deal before the next president is inaugurated in January?
Well, I'm going to say I'm hopeful. Again, mm-hmm. I don't know anybody in elected office who doesn't understand the sense of urgency around this. It just happens that there are differences in what the final deal is going to look like. But, you know, I spend the vast majority of my time in the congressional district that I have served now for the past 8 years listening to people. And when I can't meet with them in person because of this pandemic, we are doing Zooms. I've done as many as 8 Zooms in a day talking to school superintendents, to principals, to hospital administrators, doctors, nurses, public health officials, small business owners. And I can't imagine that anybody in elected office isn't hearing the same thing I'm hearing, which is we need help. And that doesn't even mention our families who need help. In our package, we have another round of $1,200 stimulus aid that's going to individuals. And that would be $2,400 for families and plus $500 per dependent. So we have money in there to help families get past this. We have more money in the package that we passed, and we are still negotiating for the smallest of the small businesses so they can survive this and come out the other out of the other end of this pandemic and try to get up and running again. So, I'm going to say I'm hopeful. Again, the fact that the negotiations are ongoing is good. You know, just a very quick behind-the-scenes story. I was on the phone with House leadership, and we were getting briefed on what the latest latest negotiations were looking. And when we were on the call, Secretary Mnuchin was on his way to drive over to the Capitol to continue the negotiations. It was during that phone call that President Trump issued that tweet a couple weeks ago where he said, all bets are off, we're pulling out, no more negotiations, we're not going to do anything until after the election. And this is what we are dealing with, whether it's a tweet, whether it is appearing at a political rally and making statements that are counterproductive to getting this done. And again, you think about things that have become partisan that should just not be partisan, whether it is, you know, social distancing, making sure you're washing your hands, making sure that you're wearing a mask. These are all things from public health experts. Same thing with the financial aid that so many families and small businesses and small towns need. You've even got the chairman of the Fed saying we desperately need another financial aid package. So there should be no partisanship to this. We have fought to get key components into this package. We fought to make sure that there was aid in there for our farmers. I know this district very well. I've lived here for 35 years of my life. I've lived in Illinois my entire life. I know this area and I know the needs here. And when we have delivered those messages loudly and clearly, we just need to have a willing partner on the Senate side. And we certainly need a willing partner who will sign this into law out of the White House.
I want to ask you about health care, specifically the fact that Amy Coney Barrett seems likely to be confirmed to the Supreme Court, and opponents of her confirmation are concerned that her appointment could lead to the Affordable Care Act being ruled unconstitutional. If that does happen, and come January there's a Democratic president, House and Senate, what sort of options do you think would be on the table for Democrats improving health care?
Well, it's not even what's on the table. We've passed legislation that for the first time in history would allow Medicare to negotiate the price of prescription drugs and bring those down, those costs down for families all over this country. We've passed that. We've sent that over to the Senate. That's also one of those bills sitting over there. We have, our votes reflect the fact that we are for not only keeping the Affordable Care Act, but making sure that it is healthy. You know, we're in a political season right now, and we are 1 week off on Tuesday, 1 week off from what is probably the most historical election in most of our lifetimes. I'm going to bring up something that is very different between my opponent and me, in that I support the Affordable Care Act. I worked in healthcare for a decade before I went to Congress. I know this issue very well, and my opponent is for repealing the Affordable Care Act. And what's worth noting for people listening to this is there's one law in the land, only one, that protects families and individuals with pre-existing conditions, and that is the Affordable Care Act. And I don't know any family, I don't know any family who doesn't have someone with some kind of pre-existing condition, whether it's a child who was born with any kind of illness, someone who's had a heart attack, a family member who's had cancer, a family member who's diabetic. All of those are pre-existing conditions, not to mention the 8 million Americans plus who now have been diagnosed with COVID. That is now a pre-existing condition. Mm. And for my opponent to say that she is for repealing the Affordable Care Act, the only law in the land that protects people with pre-existing conditions, I think it's very important for people to understand that. And I'm in favor of not only keeping the Affordable Care Act, but making the improvements such as I just mentioned.
And with the election so close, we know that millions of Americans have already voted and are voting by mail because of the coronavirus. How confident are you that ballots will be secure and counted and the results will not be contested in courts and public opinion, and it won't essentially turn into political chaos, I guess? Are you confident that everything will be sound on Election Day and the weeks after?
I think one of the sadder components that have come out of this election cycle is the undermining of confidence in our democracy that has come out of the White House. You know, everything from gutting the U.S. Postal Service by dismantling mail sorting machines while we're in the middle of a pandemic, to not allowing overtime, again, when we're in the middle of a pandemic and we have increasing mail service that is needed, including prescription drugs that are increasingly mailed out. On top of that, a president who has not said that he would agree to a peaceful transfer of power if he is not reelected, to talking about fraud in the election process when that has literally the percentage of fraudulent votes in past election has been so minuscule that it has just never been a concern. I would say my bigger concern, or among my bigger concerns, is the foreign interference. We just learned that Iran and Russia are actively interfering with our elections right now. They're hacking into systems. We don't know that they've been effective at anything, but they are trying to sow division through social media, by posing to be different groups and targeting Democratic voters. That just came out within the last several days. That concerns me greatly. It's worth noting that, again, in our relief packages, we had money in there to protect the sanctity of this election. And, again, that has not been signed into law, despite the fact that that's been passed. It has not been signed into law. But you've got to have willing partners who understand that in the 2016 election, Russia interfered. There's not anybody in the national security system that does not concur that Russia interfered with our election. There have been many attempts to try to address this, but it takes you know, it takes two to tango, so to speak, mm-hmm. and we've just got to have a system in place where Democrats, Republicans, House, Senate, and the White House agree to take this on aggressively, and that's been absent.
And just lastly, before I let you go, obviously these are polarized times politically, and but I know you've made some effort in throughout your time in office to work with Republicans where you can. Is there a piece of legislation in this last term that you've worked on or passed on a bipartisan basis that you're particularly proud of?
Oh, well, I think it's worth noting that 80% of the legislation that I have supported is bipartisan, including when you look at the CARES Act, that I would say one of my more critical roles in that was to make sure that there was funding in there for our family farmers, that I fought very hard for to make sure that that was in there, that that actually family farmers could be could access the Paycheck Protection Program. We played a big role in making sure that they were not excluded from that. But again, 80% of the bills I have supported are bipartisan. And probably worth noting also is three quarters of the bills that I've written out of my own office are I have a Republican co-sponsor from day one. And you know, a lot of the when you look at bipartisanship, it's what you work on at a very local level. We have the largest agricultural research laboratory in the entire nation in the congressional district that I serve. Mm-hmm. It happens to be in Peoria. Peoria, while the lab is physically located in the congressional district I serve, Darren LaHood, a Republican, also serves part of Peoria. Mm-hmm. We share that city. We share that county. We worked together on that. When the president zeroed out the budget and wanted to close that ag lab, Darren LaHood, a Republican, and I came together and we fought that. When we had an opportunity, I'm on the Appropriations Committee, which many people consider the most powerful committee in all of Congress. When I've been able to get funding to build a new firehouse at the National Guard unit at in Peoria, Darren LaHood was supportive of that. So there's many opportunities where on the ground where you are focusing, hyper-focused on making things happen locally. Darren and I have worked very closely together. I've also worked very closely with Adam Kinzinger, a Republican, because we share Rockford, and we've had a number of successes. But I would say probably the most dramatic bipartisan effort was the USMCA trade deal.
Mm-hmm.
When that was all said and done, we had support from Democrats, Republicans, the House, the Senate, the White House, organized labor, the ag community, manufacturing, and it really was probably the best example of coming together and with support from so many different groups and both parties, both sides of the U.S. Capitol and the president.
All right. Excellent. Thank you so much for your time today, Congresswoman. Best of luck the next 2 weeks, and stay safe out there.